An investigation that is international, independent, and impartial in the hope the truth regarding these matters will lead to justice. That is the call by the UN, Human Rights Watch, and others regarding Israeli actions in Gaza that led to the killing of Palestinian protesters. Israel says anyone seeking to investigate its actions is biased, threatening to walk away from UN bodies. Additionally, as the Organization of Islamic Cooperation meets over Palestine, some of its members openly seek diplomatic, security, and trade relations with Israel, putting its efficacy into question. Join me, Waqar Ouzou, as we discuss this and more tonight. Let's firstly go to our correspondent, Reshan Sıglam, who is joining us live now from Istanbul, from the venue of that OIC summit itself. Reshan, just give us an overview about what was spoken of at the summit.
Yes, actually, just today, the OIC summit was held upon the request of Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to condemn the Israeli aggression against the Palestinians. Let me mention that 40 countries out of 57 from the OIC member states attended this meeting. Nine of those were presidents on the level of presidency. And let me highlight that Iranian President Hassan Rouhani was among those, also the Jordanian King Abdullah II, the Palestinian Premier Rami Hamdallah, instead of the Palestinian President, because he has medical issues and medical conditions. Also Kuwaiti Emir Sheikh Sabah Al-Ahmad Al-Sabah, also Qatari Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al-Thani, and Egyptian Foreign Minister Sameh Shoukry, and also Saudi Arabian Foreign Minister Adel Al-Jubeir. And this is this representation for Saudi Arabia is higher than the previous one. Now, this is the second extraordinary summit held for Palestine in less than half a year. The first one was in December. We heard the speeches of the attendees, and the attendees mainly spoke about the importance of taking practical actions against what is happening in Palestine and the aggressions of the Israeli authorities against the Palestinians. They also spoke about the importance of saving the region from bloodshed and chaos. President Erdogan also said that what the United States and Israel are trying to do is to spread chaos in the region, and those actions are nothing but taking the region into more violence and giving Israel more authority or giving Israel the reason to have more violence or to attack the Palestinians more and more without being held accountable. And gathered also agreed that the United Nations Security Council is doing nothing towards Israel for its aggressions, and it should be taking extra measures, or it should be taking clear stances from what is happening. Also, President Erdogan said that he will take this issue to the ICC, International Criminal Court, and also he will is going to discuss it in the UN General Assembly. Also, President Rouhani spoke about the importance of taking practical actions against Israel and the United States when it comes to trade and politics, and mainly he was hinting to boycotting Israel and the United States in trade and politics. And as we know that Turkey have expelled the Israeli ambassador and consul previously, and many in Turkey here are calling the Turkish government for some extra measures against Israel economically and militarily.
Very well, Reshan, we'll leave there at that. But of course, as always, we do appreciate your reporting for us. Our guests for tonight's discussion are former American intelligence linguist Scott Rickard, who is joining us live from St. Petersburg. And we're also joined by professor at George Washington University, Professor Nabil Mikhail, who is joining us live from Washington, D.C. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us. Professor Mikhail, I'll start with you. The UN human rights chief, professor, has said that Israel's killing of Palestinian protesters in Gaza was wholly disproportionate and has backed calls for an international investigation, which we now know has been approved. Do you agree with his assessment, and do you support this investigation?
Greetings to you, to the audience, and to the guest. Look, there is almost a consensus or a semi-consensus that there was a very heavy Israeli hand in handling the protesters in Gaza a week ago and in previous weeks. Even the Pope, Pope Francis from the Vatican, spoke about this. I believe also, I'm conservative in my views, the Financial Times of London in its American edition, which carries mostly conservative views, perhaps made the subtlest remark so far when they said that Netanyahu is using a maximalist approach in hitting the Palestinians, and Trump, by being silent, endorses that, or if he talks to him privately or in secretly, is endorsing that maximalist approach. So I think the best description, the best phrasing comes from the Financial Times. A maximalist Israeli approach. The question is what the minimalist Israeli approach would be. Could it be just an agreement between the Palestinians and the Israelis to position personnel, military personnel from overseas, a foreign deployment of troops to separate the Gazans from the Israelis? So this is, of course, is a very, very remote possibility. I do not think it will happen. But the question is what the alternative is. If there is a repression, a maximalist approach, a minimalist approach, what kind of policy will we be seeing between the Israelis and the Palestinians of Gaza? We are almost in the middle of the year 2018. If this is repetitive, it will be catastrophic. Why? You will have 10 Palestinians killed each week. So you will start counting at the end of 2018, oh my God, 300, 400 more Palestinians were killed in clashes between the Israelis and the Palestinians of Gaza. So the question is how to stop the violence. Will there be an endless, an unstoppable cycle of hit, run, attack, overkill? So there is no exit from this crisis. So I hope someone can find a solution. It is not a border question. It is more than a border dispute. It is something cultural, something religious, something moralist, and something ethical. Okay, this so is Scott, what is at stake between the Palestinians and the Israelis.
Scott, Professor Mikhail got through a lot there, so I just wanted to hone in on one point, Scott, and I wanted to connect it with something that President Rouhani, I believe, had said earlier, speaking specifically about why Israel feels emboldened at this time to be able to carry out this sort of a massacre against Palestinians. He spoke specifically, of course, about the U.S. embassy move to Jerusalem al-Quds, and secondly, the fact that there is, unfortunately, no unity within the Muslim world and Muslim countries to face Israel and to counter Israel. Do you agree with that?
Well, absolutely. Rouhani is 100% right. The Israelis are incredibly emboldened now, given the support from the Trump administration for Netanyahu. Netanyahu's extremely emboldened these days. There's no pushback whatsoever at the UN. Nikki Haley and the U.S. have vetoed pretty much every legitimate issue brought in front of the Security Council. What we have here is an incredibly emboldened Israel at this point. It's more than it's been, I would say, since Lyndon Johnson in the 60s, when his undying support for his Zionist beliefs. I think that we have a different type of support when it comes to the Arab League and the Arab world. What we have is the alliances, unfortunately, with the opposing forces to Assad, when I'm including, obviously, Saudi Arabia, and certainly the Jordanians have been involved. And absolutely, when it comes to the Israelis, the Israelis have been completely complicit in the activities in Syria. At the same time, you have Qatar involved because of the activities that occurred not only in Syria, but also in Libya. However, more recently, you've seen Turkey, as well as Qatar, pull back from the activities that have happened in Syria. So there is a shift in the Arab world where there could be some alliances, but those would come with grave danger in going against the United States. You have, unfortunately, the United States and Great Britain have massive influence on Jordan, on Egypt, and certainly on Qatar. So these are Arab countries that I would suspect would like to turn much like Turkey has turned, but unfortunately they have too much at stake with their alliances with the West. At this point, though, you know, if the reason that this has gone on is we had a foreign policy that has been amok since 1948 and the Nakba, and you had 700,000 people, and today You know, this is the largest concentration camp in the history of the world. There's 2 million people, half of them are under the age of 18, and at the same time, the median age in the country is only 19 years old. So we have basically children right. who are being held captive on the Gaza Strip, and these children that are being held captive are being held under collective punishment by an occupying force that is nothing more than apartheid. So the only thing that can bring down apartheid in my lifetime is massive global boycott. And obviously, my hat's off to the Palestinians. Continue your peaceful protest in mass and do not be the slaves, much like the Warsaw ghetto of Germany. Do not be the slaves to your captors. Fight against your captors, but only in a very, very nonviolent, right. peaceful way.
All right, so Professor Mikhail, I wanted to go to the OIC summit, this extraordinary summit that Turkey called for and took place in Istanbul today. Do you think, Professor, that there is a certain amount of hypocrisy here on the part of some of these countries of the OIC? And I'm going to use Turkey as an example just because it's a convenient example to use, but there are many other examples. Turkey has trade with Israel of upwards of $3.4 billion. That's a statistic according to the IMF from the year 2017. For Turkey to be, you know, having this very heavy rhetoric against Israel, saying, listen, what you're doing is wrong in Gaza towards the Palestinian peoples, but then at the same time to have that sort of economic trade with it, that's sort of hypocritical, isn't it? That sort of defeats the purpose, doesn't it, Professor?
You can interpret the behavior in whatever language you'd like to use, hypocrite, cynicism, skepticism, whatever. But actually, let me begin from America. Either yesterday or 2 days ago, the New York Times ran an op-ed piece by someone who defended Israeli actions. I have no objection. Everyone is entitled to his or her views. But they never granted that right, say, to anyone from Egypt, anyone from any country that experienced the turmoil between democracy and giving the Islamists the chance to rule. When the army moved into Egyptian politics, there was, and still, a harsh criticism of it. The newspaper, the New York Times, never allowed any pro-government in Egypt to express its opinions. So there is a great deal of manipulation. You control the media, and you can propagate your message. The problem is that there is not just some sort of a dichotomy in the world of Islam. There is also the same in the world of Christendom and among the Jews, but regrettably also among the Palestinians. Like, say, the Palestinians cannot talk to each other despite all these calls for reconciliation except through a mediator. Recall General Omar Suleiman, the former intelligence chief of Egypt, where he mediated tons of sessions trying to narrow the gap between Hamas and the Palestinian Authority. So the question is the Palestinian problem at heart. Can the Palestinians be unified? That's one thing. If this unity is found, they will they have one opinion regarding Israel or the United States? I'm thinking of what kind of offer will Trump personally dangle before the Arabs, the Muslims, and the Palestinians to resuscitate the peace process. Like, say, what will be the conditions, what will be the availability of a suggestion? All I perceive is that there will be some sort in the future of a tipping point where Trump himself with his advisors would say, we have supported Israel enough, let us now turn our attention to the Arabs, to the Muslims, and to the Palestinians. I can put some pressure on Netanyahu to end the settlements despite official statements by the Israeli government to continue that trend. But I foresee some point whereby Trump can rearrange his cards. How this will happen, we do not know. So things will continue, whether trade right. agreements or promises for conducting further rounds of peace negotiations, but nothing decisive so far is in the offing or is in the coming.
Scott, you know, I would imagine that Iran, President Rouhani would argue that, listen, it's really hard to move forward in this fashion with this sort of disunity that we're seeing with countries openly wanting relations with Israel, such as Saudi Arabia. You know, our correspondent was saying that Adel Al-Jubeir, the Saudi foreign minister who attended this OIC summit, was visibly unhappy to be there. So, it's interesting, isn't it, Scott, that how does then this Muslim world that claims that it stands up for, and of course, I'm talking about specific countries that want to have relations with Israel, how do they sell that they're both pro-Palestine but want relations with Israel?
Well, obviously, when you look at Saudi Arabia and others in the Arab League, they absolutely have betrayed the Arab world. Look what they did to Gaddafi. And certainly, you cannot count on them, just like you cannot count on the United States. Thankfully, there are many other countries in the world that can be counted upon in this scenario. Obviously, China and Russia have emerged as the reasonable voices in the world today. You have seen tremendous diplomacy and tremendous patience by the Russians in Syria. And certainly the activity by the Iranians has shown tremendous patience. The Iranians have been surrounded by American forces for decades, and the Americans have been taunting them into war, even downing an Iranian commercial aircraft several decades ago. So you really, truly have reasonable players that can work together. And the UN has proven over and over that the United States is not a valuable player. They are continually vetoing tremendously legitimate legislative decisions within the Security Council only because the massive amounts of influence by the pro-Israel lobby, and Nikki Haley is a great example of that. She's a tremendous tool for the Zionist entity that runs a lot of the political infrastructure, not only in the United States, but certainly in Great Britain and France. And these are the three major players. Now, at the same time, when it comes to Great Britain, many of the ministers of parliament, very much like George Galloway, has spoken out in tremendous eloquent words to basically put down the apartheid Israel activities and make it a vocal point within their parliament. So my hat's off to the politicians that are bucking the system and not dependent upon pro-Israel campaign finances in order to become basically puppets for the Zionist entities that run a lot of the political infrastructures in our respective countries. At this point, the only thing that can really happen is really becoming a tremendous boycott. And I agree with you that Turkey is paying hypocritical in this sense. Certainly, Turkey has a tremendous economic participation with the Israelis, and by cutting off that type of trade, we would see a big turnaround, especially if we could get the Israeli economy to start a massive downfall in a short period of time. I think the people of Israel and certainly individuals around the world would recognize that as a turn of events.
All right, so Professor Mikhail, let's look at then the solution that's been presented so far by the international community, that is, the UN Human Rights Council, as you well know, as I asked you in the first question as well, has now approved an independent investigation, a war crimes investigation into Israeli actions, specifically in Gaza, the massacre that occurred. There's also talk, Professor, about Palestine, and this has happened numerous times over the past years, Palestine going to the ICC, the International Criminal Court, to file a report against Israel there. Do you think that these measures will help, considering Israel has said specifically about the UN investigation, that is, that this will not change the situation on the ground one iota?
Look, there will be an authorization for these investigations, but there are two questions. Whether the Israelis will cooperate with them or not, because also they either will provide a different version or they would require also the commission to pay attention to what the Palestinians did as they consider provocative actions. The other important question, and it's not going to be a surprise, is that the United States will not support the conclusion of that report if it is issued and if it blames Israel. The United States would say they should have talked to the Palestinians more, they should have blamed the Palestinians enough for some mistakes that they did. So it is not really something that's going to change the context of the dispute between the Palestinians and Israelis. But there is one important thing, which is that gradually the Palestinian Authority is trying to bring the question of settlements to international forums. And this is important because even in Israel itself, there is a trend that does not want an expansion inside a potential Palestinian state land. So what I will be looking for is what kind of decision or recommendation will be made by either an international court or an international body of jurisdiction or jurisprudence over the question of settlements, because that can be important. That can impact the future of a Palestinian state. That also can impact domestic Israeli politics, since the settlement movement is supported by a segment of the Israeli population. And also that can cause a bigger problem or deepen the disagreement between the Europeans, the Russians, and the Americans over the relationship between Israel and a future Palestinian state.
Scott, what do you make of that? Because, you know, and many people would argue, Scott, that the notion of a Palestinian state or two states died a very long time ago, and that the final nail in the coffin possibly was the move of the United States to recognize Jerusalem al-Quds as the capital of Israel, which Israel has seen as obviously all of Jerusalem al-Quds, not just West Jerusalem al-Quds. So what do you make of that, then? Is there any notion of that even left right now?
Well, first I'd like to say is there's absolutely no need for more investigations. It's really a waste of time. They've proven to be very unsuccessful in the past, and certainly any further investigations are not going to be useful whatsoever. When it comes to a two-state solution, it's always been a dead issue. In fact, most of the Palestinians don't really want a two-state solution as much as they want the right of return. They would very much like to return to their properties that were stolen from them. 700,000 people were displaced in 1948, and this is the property that they would like back. This was the property that was not handed to the Israeli occupying forces as a part of the Balfour Agreement or as a part of the agreement in 1948 by the United Nations, unfortunately supported illegally by Harry Truman. But at this point, you know, I think we ought to take into consideration the hypocrisy of the situation. Let's just say there were 2 million Jewish individuals trapped in a city and blockaded since 2012 for 6 years. And the average age of that Jewish population was only 19 years old, and they were being bombed and snipered and shot to death on a regular basis, where by thousands, almost 10,000 had been killed in the last 10 to 15 years. I think we'd see a lot different turnout in these types of activities and the kinds of boycotts that we would see around the world, and the individuals that were causing that kind of genocide and that kind of ghetto, the Gaza ghetto, that we would see a serious humanitarian right. effort by the world to stop that situation.
Okay, Scott, I'm going to interrupt you, and I do apologize because unfortunately the clock has gotten the best of us, Scott. I do sincerely apologize. We'll have to continue this conversation with the both of you at a later date, but of course we do appreciate both of your contributions to tonight's discussion. That was former American intelligence linguist Scott Rickert, who was speaking to us live from St. Petersburg, and we were also joined by professor at George Washington University, Professor Nabil Mikhail, who had been speaking to us live from Washington, D.C. And of course, viewers, as always, we appreciate you joining us. Until next time, good night.